You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis.
No one has ever succeeded like I have.
This was not espionage. This was an attack.
You're gonna get clobbered, Jim.
Jim Comey, he's more famous than me.
Really looking forward to working with you. Let's take a picture.
We've now been presented the dossier concerning Russia and its connection to Trump.
Putin began cultivating Trump as an asset, helped in real estate deals, hundreds of millions in loans.
That constitutes a real threat to national security.
Would you like to come over for dinner tonight?
Just the two of us?
Nobody gets treated as unfairly as I do. It's disgraceful.
Sir?
I need loyalty. I expect loyalty.
The president just committed a crime in your presence.
Stop deciding what we do and don't need to know.
It's so crazy in there.
We're steaming towards an iceberg.
I want to know what you can do to lift this Russia cloud.
If we ever put anything above the truth, it's a bell that can never be unrung.
That was a clip from The Comey Rule, based on James Comey's best-selling memoir, A Higher Loyalty. This two-night event airs on Showtime September 27th and 28th at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. And today I'm joined by the film's writer-director, Billy Ray, and Emmy-winning actor, Jeff Daniels, who stars as the embattled FBI director. They open up about their own initial anger at James Comey over the 2016 Hillary Clinton probe and why they want to set the record straight about the man behind the two most controversial investigations of the 21st century. Jeff reveals what attracts him to roles that define what it means to be an American, why he's not afraid of projects that take a political stand, how it felt to step into the shoes of one of the most divisive figures of our time, and what it was like to sit across the table from actor Brendan Gleeson as the other most divisive figure of our time, President Donald Trump. Billy recalls his extensive conversations with the real James Comey, the rule that governed every single decision that Comey made, and what Billy learned from his additional years' worth of interviews, including one with a powerful Trump ally. They also discuss their race to finish the Comey rule in time to impact the 2020 presidential race, and how they convinced Showtime to move the premiere date up to just 5 weeks before the election. Plus, Billy and Jeff say they hope Trump supporters will tune in to hate watch the Comey rule, and they're fully prepared for an angry tweet storm from the president himself. Coming up with Jeff Daniels and Billy Ray in just a moment. Just in time for the election, Showtime is releasing a two-part television event based on James Comey's number one New York Times best-selling book, A Higher Loyalty, written and directed by Billy Ray, the Oscar-nominated screenwriter behind Captain Phillips, Shattered Glass, and Richard Jewell. The Comey Rule stars Emmy winner Jeff Daniels as former FBI Director Comey and Emmy winner Brendan Gleeson as President Donald Trump in a riveting, immersive, and behind-the-scenes account of the historically turbulent events surrounding the 2016 presidential election and its aftermath, which divided a nation. The Comey Rule premieres on consecutive nights, Sunday, September 27th and Monday, September 28th at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific on Showtime. And today I'm delighted to talk with both Jeff Daniels and Billy Ray. Guys, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Well, you know, I don't know if you can actually see this, but I am, in your honor, wearing my Comey is my homie t-shirt today. And I'll tell you, the origin of the shirt, actually, I don't know if you know this story, but it goes back to an event immediately following James Comey's unceremonious dismissal as director, when the FBI had their annual company picnic, so to speak, and hundreds of FBI employees showed up wearing this shirt. And it really underscores the point that as controversial as Comey was politically, he was practically a saint among the everyday working people at the FBI. And I think that's one of the things that this film really drives home, isn't it?
It was very important to me that that message get out there. Obviously, the White House had done a massive disinformation campaign about Comey, led by Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who then, of course, went under oath, said that that was not true at all, that the things she had said about how Comey was hated within the FBI, that was absolutely false. Interesting thing about Sarah, that she doesn't mind lying in front of the camera, but she will not lie when perjury is on the line.
Yeah.
Yes, of course, he was beloved inside the FBI and massively respected, and that was important that, that we both explained that that was the truth and that we explained why that was the truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you did a fantastic job of fleshing out the key events and the players in the Clinton and the Russia investigation, especially now that the Mueller investigation and the impeachment are a little fresher in the public's mind. I think you kind of do a service to remind Americans how this all began and how out of norm this president really is. But I also wonder if part of the motivation was to set the record straight about who James Comey is, what motivates him, and why he made the decisions he did.
That may have been a motivation for Jeff. For me, it had more to do with talking about what it means to be a public servant. I got very, very tired of hearing public servants mischaracterized as the deep state, when in fact they were actually patriots. They were and are the people who stand between us and authoritarianism. You know, Jeff describes Comey as being the first whistleblower of the Trump administration. I think that's very true. I think there are a lot of people in working in government today whose allegiance is to the Constitution and to the rule of law. And I thank God for them.
Yeah, Jeff, was that part of your motivation to kind of do him justice?
Not going in. I definitely know he'd been vilified, politically hated by both sides. So he was controversial. That's all an attraction to me. And then it's just the executing of how you're going to do it. And the easiest thing for me, and Billy and I talked about this early, was we need to show them what he was thinking, why he did what he did. Because I learned a lot. You know, I was probably one of those guys in October 2016 when the Hillary email thing was reopened. And I said, what the hell is he thinking? Well, the film shows you what he was thinking. And he was constantly between a rock and a hard place. And he had to make a decision. And you learn more about what he was up against and repercussions if he did this and the repercussions if he did that. But he has to pick one of them. And that was news to me. That I learned a lot.
Yeah. Doing that. Jeff, you've kind of spoken to this, but Billy, were there times when you also during 2016 or later felt angry and pissed off at James Comey? And if so, how did you guys process those feelings?
No, I didn't feel angry at James Comey in 2016. I just hated him. I like many people, mistakenly blamed him for the election of Donald Trump. Turns out, as we now know, and has been confirmed by James Clapper to me personally, the deciding factor in 2016 in that election was the Russians. It was not meddling. It was an attack. It succeeded. And the election of Donald Trump was viewed as a success in Moscow. But at the time, I didn't know that. At the time, I thought it was Comey. So I had a lot of feelings about him, which I have shared with him. And Comey, to his credit, because he has enormous integrity, never tried to manipulate me, never tried to spin me in any way, never tried to convince me that he was more or less than I thought of him. He just served as a resource and answered my questions. And I think he trusted that I would see his behavior and I would draw my own conclusions, which I did. Got to know his family, particularly Patrice. That made a huge difference in how I felt about him, and got to know the people who had worked for him and heard what they had to say about him. And all of that got folded into the script, which then got expressed through Jeff's performance.
And it's very rare to meet someone who doesn't have an opinion on James Comey. Are you guys prepared for the possibility, especially in our current political climate, that there are going to be some viewers, maybe a lot of viewers, who have just made up their mind about James Comey and maybe aren't going to be open to reevaluating his legacy?
I think it's more likely that we're going to get hate watched by both the right and the left.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with it. You know, my feeling is if you tune in to hate James Comey or to support Donald Trump or any place on the political spectrum in between, my feeling is if they tune in for 5 minutes and see how good the performances are and see that the storytelling is fair, we'll have them for two nights. So that's all I ask, America. Give me 5 minutes.
Well, I can't recall if this is overtly referenced in the movie, but can you explain the title? What is the Comey Rule?
It is not overtly referenced in the movie, but the title came about as a result of my research. You know, Comey's book was a great jumping off point, but it was not the only research I did. I had to get on a plane and meet all kinds of people in D.C. who had experienced this and get their perspectives, and they were not all Comey fans. Inside the Department of Justice, I kept hearing a reference to this thing called the Comey Rule. And what it was a joke inside the Department of Justice. The Comey Rule meant if you are putting your own personal credo above the norms of the Department of Justice, that's the Comey Rule.
Interesting.
And I thought it was a great title. I still do.
You know, when I look at James Comey, he seems to be a man cut from a different cloth than many of us today. His sense of integrity, of duty, and patriotism are almost from a bygone era or out of a movie or something, to the extent that, you know, I think a lot of Americans wondered what was his angle. For you, Jeff, it must have been similar to when you played George Washington in The Crossing, in that you're essentially portraying someone who is almost too decent to be believed, and yet you have to make him flesh and blood. How do you do that? What was your entry point to a character like James Comey?
In any drama, you look for obstacles that are between you and what you want, what the character wants. And the further we got into it, the easier it became to play him, because Jim believes in things that are bigger than he is. He believes in the institutions that are part of what makes America truly great. The rule of law, truth, and justice. He believes in doing whatever he needs to do to maintain the integrity of the FBI. These are all things that are bigger than he is. In today's America, we're a little self-absorbed. We certainly have an administration that is. And it stands out. It would never be questioned, you know, before this administration. It certainly years ago, you joined the military out of a sense of honor and discipline. Now you try to get out of it. And it's a different time. And I think even people like Jim couldn't believe that not everybody believed that there were things that were bigger and more important. That was, when you walk into a politically divided country like America is now, and you get hit from both sides, and you're Jane Comey trying to go, yeah, but the rule of law, truth, justice, it was easy to play. And it wasn't some Pollyanna Boy Scout. I mean, I can see where people called him a Boy Scout. He just believed in something so strongly that was, you know, like his own God, like your religion. I mean, he just believed in it. And for that, some people called him self-righteous and, you know, I just didn't see it.
Yeah, and we kind of forget that being a Boy Scout is not a bad thing. Maybe it's a bad thing to Donald Trump from his point of view.
No, it's not a bad thing at all.
Yeah. Now, you did this movie on the heels of your incredible stint as Atticus Finch in To Kill a Mockingbird on Broadway. And when I look at Mockingbird and The Comey Rule, as well as other projects like The Looming Tower or The Newsroom, it strikes me that you've played a number of characters who are really the best of America and these unimpeachable representations of what this country is about, often in situations where they're fighting a corrupt system. So much so that I suppose if they made a remake of Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, you would probably be the first person that came to mind. What attracts you to these kind of roles?
The honest answer is since Newsroom, they've come to me. And that's I'm so excited about this decade of my career. I've gotten to do some of the best roles of my whole career back to back to back to back. And Jim Comey's one of them. He's this, a great dramatic character to play that you can find. Your hero's between a rock and a hard place constantly. And Billy's script just it plays like a thriller. It just keeps hitting this guy. And you'll come out with a better understanding of what this guy was up against. Mm-hmm. And, as heroes go and as complicated and challenging characters go, Comey fit right in all those characters that I've gotten to play from Newsroom on.
And you don't seem to be afraid to do roles that take on a definite political point of view. Do you give much thought to the fallout of that or the fact that when you do a project that takes a political position, inevitably you risk alienating 50% of your audience?
Yeah, I don't. I look at the role. I don't care. I don't care. I'll play the politics of the character I'm playing. Mm-hmm. I'm supposed to be a chameleon. Yeah. I've never been one of those actors. Well, I would never do that because of my own personal politics, or my own feeling. No, you play everybody. You play way over there to way over there. I got to play Frank Griffin in Godless, for God's sake. I couldn't wait. Couldn't wait. So. It's the actor in you wants to play the most despicable and the most heroic. You want the whole range.
We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll return with more when we come back in just a moment. Well, Jeff, I know that you spend a lot of time in Michigan, where you founded the Purple Rose Theater Company. Michigan went to Trump in 2016, fueled by all the white working class men who were promised that Donald Trump would bring back their jobs. How does a movie like The Comey Rule play when you go back to Michigan? Do you ever run into headwinds because of the political stands that you take?
Yeah, it's cost us, but I don't care. Especially now here in 2020, it's too important. So. I'm not too out there, but I'm out there enough where you know where I stand. And if you'd like to debate me, we can do that. We can do that right here, right now on the sidewalk. But no, it's not been. I also try. We're at the Purple Rose. I wrote a play called Flint. It was after the water had happened and the state government was, playing hide and seek with documents and all that. And I wrote a play called Flint about a black couple and a white couple after 6 weeks before the state came forward and said, oh, by the way, for the last year, it has been poisoning you.
Wow.
So they were 6 weeks from announcing, but up until that point, and I didn't write about the state government or the governor at all. I wrote about the systemic racism that's going on, that because it was a pretty much a community of people of color, it got less attention and less importance than, say, a Grand Rapids or an Ann Arbor. And we didn't know what was going to happen, but I was prepared to stand out there in front of the TV cameras and go, what would you like to talk about? So, I've been kind of going, all right, enough with the comedies. Here's a couple things you need to think about. If you don't like it, don't come back.
Yeah. I just had Aaron Brockovich on, who was heavily involved in the Flint water crisis. And the thing that struck me that was so offensive about that is, the Aaron Brockovich story, that's dealing with a big corporation poisoning people. But Flint, it was their own municipality that was letting them drink this stuff.
It was a whole bunch of people. And that's in litigation and courts and all that. I don't know enough about that.
Right.
All I know is that people got sick and they shouldn't.
Now, the film is based on James Comey's memoir, A Higher Loyalty. And Billy, as you mentioned a moment ago, you spoke with James Comey, and you also did a year's worth of interviews on top of that to get additional background on these events. What were some particular areas where you wanted to dig a little deeper than the book went and maybe fill in some gaps?
Well, I wanted perspectives from lots of different people. I wanted to hear from people who had worked for Comey. I wanted to hear from people who were detractors of Comey's. I wanted to hear from people at the DOJ. I would have been happy to hear from people in the White House. That was tricky. That was enormously tricky. But I was able to talk to people from the other side of the aisle.
Really?
And hear their perspective on Comey and on Trump. I obviously had to talk to tons of reporters who had covered the story, who had insights that were very valuable and all wound up in the series. And of course, had to do all the reading that I could do. I mean, you know, there was the IG report and things like that, public-facing documents that were enormously helpful to me. And I would not have taken this on if I wasn't going to have access to all of those other perspectives.
I'm curious, who did you talk to on Trump's side, or was that on background?
It was all on background.
Oh, okay.
And I would have been happy to have spoken to Trump himself, but it was our determination that the White House was not going to allow us to do that without seeing the script. And there was zero upside for us in showing the White House the script.
And talking to the people on Trump's side or plain old Republicans, was there anything that came particularly shocking to you or was very interesting about that perspective?
Well, one story sticks out. I was speaking to a Republican fundraiser who told me that as October was winding down in 2016, he couldn't raise a dollar for Donald Trump. Trump was in a lot of trouble from the perspective of fundraising. And when Comey's letter to the Gang of Eight leaked, and it became clear that the Hillary Clinton investigation was opening up again, the next day, this guy raised $35 million for Donald Trump.
Wow. That's unbelievable. So, yeah, so the Hillary investigation was a pretty good fundraising tool for him, it turns out, huh?
The gift that kept on giving.
Wow. Now, how much time did you actually spend with James Comey, and what is he like as a person?
Comey's a remarkable guy. I've spent as much time with him as I requested. And had access to him via email in between our meetings to ask procedural questions. Mm-hmm. How would a meeting like this have gone? Is this language that would have been used inside the FBI? Because it was important to get the rhythm of that right. Incredible integrity, very much a family man, great sense of humor. One thing that I didn't know how to put into the series, there was just no way to do it organically, but I think would stun people, is that he watches This Is Us every week and cries during every episode. That was not something that people know. and there was no way to fit it in the series. But perhaps if we do a sequel, I'll be able to fit it in there.
We all know the ending we want if there's a sequel. So, or at least I do. Jeff, I know that you've played real people in other projects before, but is this the first time that you've actually had the opportunity to sit down with the person that you're playing and pick their brain?
It might be. I'd have to think way back. But I think it probably is.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't sit down and pick his brain. I read the book. I heard his audio book that Jim read, which helped a lot. YouTube, you get every physicality of Jim Comey's all over the YouTube. And then Colbert, the Colbert Show, you could see his sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
That book was, I mean, if every character I ever played had written a book, it would be so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
But I had plenty. I contacted him a couple months before we started shooting and you know, said, if you're in New York, I can't leave, but if you're in New York, I'd love to see you. And he said, oh, I'll try to get up. Maybe I will. And he didn't. And I that was okay. I had enough. I also didn't want to impose. I know that he had been talked into writing the book and he had really been talked into letting the movie happen. So I'd meet him soon enough. I felt that I had enough to go in and suggest him. And with Billy's help, who I looked at as the true Comey historian, that was my source, really, that I'd be okay once I got my legs under me.
Well, I also kind of wonder if that's something that you even find helpful as an actor, because I could see how meeting with your subject might bias your portrayal, or having too much background information maybe could muddy the waters as an actor, huh?
Yeah, and I also, my audience for this is not Jim Comey.
Right.
And at the end of the day, I don't care what he thinks. I can't. I'm not allowed to. The actor has to portray the character to an audience. That's different. And so I felt I had enough. You hope he likes it, but it's not a requirement. But you, as you go in, you start to go, okay, who is this guy? Oh, this is the guy. This is who I think he is. And you throw that at the lens.
Mm-hmm.
After a few weeks, we decide, yes, it is. That is what it is. And then we're off and running. And then Comey kind of comes in and sees it. And by the time he saw it, we were doing pretty good. And I had a good feeling that he probably would like what we were doing.
And I can tell you
an authentic portrayal is what I ended up feeling.
Definitely.
Ben, I can tell you, there was never a second, not a second, where Jeff and I had a disagreement about the character and about what the character should look like, feel like, sound like. There was never, not even a take, a single take, where I went up to him and I said, I that doesn't feel like Comey to me. I think Jeff had just sort of ingested who this person was based on what the character wanted and how the character typically went about trying to get it. And I don't remember like even a second of a course correction that I had to give Jeff about the way he was playing Comey. If I gave Jeff notes at all, they were about, okay, now you've tried to get it this way. What if we tried to get it that way?
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of just ways to talk to the people around him, just so I'd have options in the editing. It would be the difference between giving him one verb or giving him another. And Jeff is the kind of actor who can give you either. But no, he had the guy day one. He had Comey down.
Yeah, it's a fantastic performance, Jeff. And one thing that I took away from the show, even more than from the book, was just what an impossible position James Comey was in, especially with the Clinton investigation. But I wonder if you guys think that maybe in some cases he boxed himself into those situations either out of a sense of duty or ego or I don't know what.
I would say that part of the point of this series is to say to the American and to the worldwide audience, because I think we're going to be seen everywhere, God bless Showtime, is to say, okay, be Jim Comey for 5 minutes. Here are the factors. Here are the facts. Here are the constraints. Here are the pressures. Here's the reality of 2016. What would you have done? And I think people will live in his shoes because Jeff's performance draws you in that way.
And I would add, and take politics out of the decision.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the road splits with people.
Yeah, you really do give me a newfound empathy for James Comey. And I was already pretty pro-Comey to begin with. But, you know, I think that the film does this excellent job of showing the impact that these two investigations had on Comey and his family and just how reviled he was during the Clinton investigation. It's so hard for the average person to even fathom what it would be like to be trashed in the media day in and day out by both Republicans and Democrats. It must have felt pretty lonely to be James Comey during all this, Jeff. What was it like to be in the shoes of the quote-unquote most hated man in America at that time?
What it ends up feeling like is what he was doing, which is being apolitical.
Mm-hmm.
And he was doing what public servants are required to do. They put their own personal politics aside and they make decisions based on the apolitical choice.
Mm-hmm.
Comey was arguably one of the first whistleblowers. An apolitical public servant who said, wait a minute, this isn't how it's supposed to go. After him came people like Fiona Hill, Marie Yovanovitch, William Taylor, Colonel Vindman, among others. That's what an apolitical public servant looks like. Mm-hmm. We didn't know that back in October 2016.
I would also say, Ben, it's not a big stretch for Jeff to imagine what it would be like to behave in a way that's going to make A Lot of America Hates You, because Jeff played this part. Jeff walked into this part knowing that when this thing airs, there will be people who will come after him. In the same way that they came after Comey. Comey's a polarizing figure. Trump is a polarizing figure. People have very, very passionate feelings about what's happened to America's democracy in 2020. You know, Jeff did not sail into this blindly knowing that there would be no cost to him having played the part. That's so, the kind of courage that Comey had. So it's a very good fit for Jeff.
So I guess both of you guys are ready for the angry hate tweet from the most powerful man in the world, huh?
I can't imagine a greater service he could do to our series than to tweet about it.
Yeah. Now, I have to also mention Brendan Gleeson, who turns in quite a performance as Donald Trump himself. And he does a good job of avoiding that trap of taking it so over the top that it becomes, you know, like Alec Baldwin doing an SNL sketch. He strikes just the right balance. But at times it's eerie how he gets Donald Trump's cadence and its mannerisms so right. And the makeup on him, the look of Donald Trump. Wow. What was it like, Jeff, to be sitting in a room across from Donald Trump? Was it a little unnerving?
In good ways. You have my performances in the other actor, and I know that Comey was in the middle of a verbal tsunami during that dinner, and that's what Brendan Gleeson brought. And you just sit there, and you can almost feel the wind of what did he say, and what is he, and just coming from all, you couldn't keep up. Billy said something like it was like a fire hose or something.
Well, Comey had said, when I wrote the script and I sent an early draft to Comey, one of the first things I said to him was, did I get Trump right? And he said, yes, you got the experience of sitting with Trump right. You're being hit by 10 fire hoses at once. And if you can somehow manage to get your hands around one of them, you're congratulating yourself, but you're still getting hit by 9 other fire hoses. And so if you're doing a scene like the loyalty dinner, I would say to Jeff, right before the scene, I would say, okay, give him nothing. Keep your truth. Keep your balance to the extent that you can. And then I would go to Brendan Gleeson and I would say, don't let this fucking guy breathe.
You
are the 10 fire hoses. Just keep coming at him. Knock him off balance. Do everything you can to take him off his center. And then, boom, you get the fireworks of these two guys trying to impact each other. And it takes enormous confidence, if you're Jeff, it takes incredible confidence to sit apart, to sit opposite an actor who has the bells and whistles part, and to trust your quiet, and to trust your stillness, and to know that your performance in its own way is going to be as powerful as the 10 fire hoses. Most actors would not have the nerve to do it. Jeff did. That's why that scene and all those scenes between Trump and Comey have the power that they have, because they both looked at it like a boxing match, and each was going to win a certain number of rounds. But that's what it was.
Some of these scenes in the show are moments that were extensively reported in the press, such as the dinner scene, this private dinner between Trump and Comey, or when Comey learns that he's been fired on TV while he's speaking at the LA field office. Was there one particular recreation of an event where you really thought, we absolutely have to get this one right?
That describes every event.
Yeah.
Every single second of this series, to me, had to be right. I'm not a journalist. It's not a documentary. But we had to get the spirit of these events right. And we had to get the details right. And we had to do it in a dramatic, emotional way. You know, that's the degree of difficulty of every single scene.
Yeah.
But if you are going to portray, if you're going to portray the loyalty dinner, if you're going to portray the moment where Trump asked Comey to take it easy on Michael Flynn, if you're going to portray the moment where Trump says to Andy McCabe, ask your wife how it feels to be a loser, or if you're going to portray Pulse nightclub, you have an obligation. You got to get that stuff absolutely right. And I feel we did.
Now, the show was originally due to premiere on Showtime after the 2020 election, but it got bumped up to late September 2020, a little more than a month before the election. Was there any initial concern that it might influence the election? And what went into the decision to move it up?
Well, first, everybody who was making this series made it with the intention of airing it before the election.
Okay.
And made it with the intention of presenting a case to the American public. Here's what the Russians did to our electoral process in 2016. They're trying to do it again in 2020. Okay, now you're armed with that information. Do what you will with it. It was always the intention. And I would not have spent a year and a half of my life telling this story. And I don't believe Jeff would have played the part if the understanding was that this was going to air after the election, when it would have been a historical artifact. So we made it with that intention, and we made it as fast as we could humanly make it so that it could be aired before the election. We were trying to deliver it in a ridiculous pace.
Mm-hmm.
And that was under that was at the request of the network. I remember saying to Jeff halfway through the shoot, here's what we have to do to pull a day out of our schedule so that we can actually wrap early enough to get me home a week early so I can start post, so we can make the air date that had been set aside for us.
Wow.
When we heard that in fact Showtime and Viacom were planning to air it after the election, of course we were upset. And we felt that it was a disservice.
Mm-hmm.
But Showtime and Viacom changed their minds. And I don't think it was pressure from me that made them do it. I think they realized that they were just, as a commodity, this had so much more value at the end of September than it would at the end of November. And thank God that they changed their minds and made that decision. It's absolutely the right thing for the miniseries and absolutely the right thing for the country.
You know, going into the election, one thing that I keep thinking about is how in the movie, over and over again, James Comey expresses this unshakable belief that America will outlast Trump and it can set itself back on course before it's too late. Do you guys share his faith that that will happen?
I have some guarded optimism about it. I think the things that make America the greatest idea for a country ever have to do with rule of law, democracy, liberty, justice, the apolitical nature of public service. Those things are very much in peril right now, very much under threat. Everybody in Washington knows that Russia is trying to influence this election. Everybody in Washington knows that Russia is trying to tip the scale in the favor of Donald Trump. No. I don't know why the Republican Party isn't taking a harder look at that, although I have suspicions about why they're not taking a harder look at that. But this is our democracy for as long as we can keep it.
Yeah.
And I truly believe that that is what is on the line in 2020. It's the most important election in American history since 1864 and has every bit as much on the line.
How about you, Jeff? Has your faith in the system been a little bit shaken by all this? Can we course correct?
Yeah, I'd like to think that that there are things in place to protect us, protect our voting, protect the election. I think we're smarter about that than we were 4 years ago. People still have to vote. What was it, 53% of the people voted last year or didn't, or last time, or didn't vote last time? That just can't happen.
Yeah.
People have to vote. They have to be more informed, and I think they are more informed 4 years since Trump won the first election. You know, in October 2016, we were less informed. We weren't paying attention as much. Grab them by the pussy, it just happened.
Yeah.
And yet that didn't tip the scales. But it still looked like Hillary was going to go in. And then the Gang of Eight, they leaked the letter and all that stuff. I'd like to think we know more now. And we're required to be more informed. I'd like to think that, especially that 20% in the middle, who thought, well, my taxes will get lowered, I'll vote for Trump because I hate Hillary, but there'll be 10 people around Trump that will protect us from him doing something stupid, crazy, or dangerous. Well, those 10 people are gone. So that can't be a reason anymore.
Yeah.
So those 20% in the middle of the country who were trying to find a reason to vote, to not vote Republican this time, or to wrap their arms around Biden, even though he's going to raise my taxes, it is so much bigger than your taxes.
Absolutely.
It is so much bigger than that. You know, taxes are the sacrifice we make to live in this great country. Yeah. That's how I look at it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, bring back the draft and draft everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, very well spoken, both of you. Before we go, I have to ask real quickly, have either of you spoken with anyone close to Trump, or maybe through 6 degrees of separation, gotten some hint of what the president's reaction will be to all of this? Do you hope that Trump will watch?
I have not spoken to anybody in the Trump administration or anybody close to the Trump administration since we wrapped. I have no idea whether or not he'll watch.
Well, get ready for that hate tweet. I'm sure it's coming. The Comey Rule premieres Sunday, September 27th and Monday, September 28th at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific on Showtime. Jeff Daniels and Billy Ray, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Jeff Daniels and Billy Ray for coming on the show. The Comey Rule premieres Sunday, September 27th and Monday, September 28th at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific on Showtime. If you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and rate and review us while you're there. 5-star ratings and detailed reviews are one of the best ways for new listeners to discover the show. You can also follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at @KickAssNewsPod and recommend us to your friends on your social media. For more fun stuff, visit kickassnews.com, and I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News.